Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, darlings. Ça va bien. I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunchen, and I'm broadcasting to you live from the heart of New York City, as I do every week with my wonderful producer, Gwendolyn Holdenberry. We are coming to you live from the Chrysler Building, high atop the Chrysler Building in the revolving ballroom of the Café Berlin in the tower there, that wonderful pointy Art Deco tower and the Café Berlin with all the glamorous people here who are here to hear our wonderful, all right, I'm lying. Darling, for those of you that follow my Tourette's and everything, you know that Mummy has been podcasting to you, not only from the Chrysler Building, but from all over the country. Gwendolyn and I have been coming to you Monday nights for over a year now, and we've been coming to you from Bismarck and Fargo and, Rapid City and Mount Rushmore. I've been in Florida and Texas and Las Vegas. I've been in Philadelphia and Cleveland and Detroit. We have been coming to you from all over the country. And today, there was a little fluky thing in which I posted a banner on Facebook saying that I love – sometimes I just love being in my own home and I like doing my own chores. I actually like doing laundry. I could win the Mega Millions. I could be a billionaire and I would still get a kick out of doing my own laundry, washing my own dishes by hand, and of course gardening. And of course there's no gardening now because it's the dead of winter, which makes Mummy very sad, but that's a subject for another time. And immediately I got hits all over the place on Facebook saying, oh, how charming, I like that too, or I don't like this, or I love ironing, and calling me a domestic goddess. So I called up Gwendolyn, who had already reported with the entire staff inside the Chrysler Building sound booth and everything, and the waiters were standing by for my arrival, and they had my favorite dish ready and everything. And I said, I'm going to stay H-O-M-E. I'm going to stay home. And I decided that I would just do my show from my home. And if you happen to be walking down 105th Street, West 105th Street and West End Avenue, you can walk right there on the corner and you can look up on the third floor and there's Mummy standing in her kitchen. Can you imagine? With a spatula, grilling what I posted on my Facebook page. That is a mixture of shallots and onions and garlic and wild mushrooms and both spicy and sweet sausages. And very good extra virgin olive oil. Yes, I do cook with extra virgin olive oil. I think that all food is dependent on the ingredients you use. So I like to use the best olive oil. I like to use San Marzano tomatoes. I like to use Veuve Clicquot for my mimosas. So I'm using expensive olive oil. And I am grilling up vegetables, which then I will freeze and keep for a week or two until Thanksgiving, and they will have marinated by that time and then become even more rich, and then they will go in with all of the breadcrumbs and all of the other ingredients that I use for stuffing for that turkey. So, and by the way, my vegan friends, I know, I'm very sorry. I have been cutting way back on my carnivorous meat eating. I'm very sorry, my vegetarian friends, but I have to serve turkey, and I apologize. So that's what the stuffing is going to be. And yes, it's true, the onions and mushrooms, I murdered them as well. So I apologize to the vegetarians, and then to the vegans and to the fruitarians, I apologize that I actually dug the vegetables and murdered them. All right, anyway, so tonight is Domestic Goddess Night here, 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, and it's call-in. Oh, before we go any farther, I want you to know that my sponsor, of course, is daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Daughtersofisis.com is all one word. Do go to your computer and enter that. And it's the fragrant memories of our ancestors. These are products and fragrances that are evocative. They touch not only our noses and our sensual places, but they also touch our psychic energy, our metaphysical energy, our intellectual energy. And of course, Gwendolyn Holden Berry is not only my wonderful producer and my muse, she is the directress. She is the directrix. She is the foundatrix of DaughtersOfIsis.com. Gwendolyn, I know that you have hundreds of fragrances. I know that you have hundreds of products. I hesitate to ask, is there a fragrance yet that you put together that is Thanksgiving stuffing and cranberry sauce? Just asking.
No, that's not strictly down my avenue, but I have created something for the holidays.
Good.
I have.
Everybody stand by. Let's listen to this. Ready.
Well, what I've done is I've created something that will fill the air with the scent of many different directions, but always pleases people at gatherings. And whether they're intimate or they're adventurous and open or public, I've created some, for the first time, it's an ancient form of making incense. They call it dupe. And basically, what they used to use as a foundation to burn this incense, the woods, the precious woods and the sweet scents of it and everything, they used to use, and still do in India, purified cow dung. I don't, of course. I use red sandalwood powder and cedarwood powder and such things. But I'm making the same thing. I'm making it by hand with essential oils and different ground up herbs and flowers and woods, lots of woods.
Wow.
And I'm creating little dupe style incense cones. And these cones are packed with so much sensual ambiance in one cone. They're expensive. They're not cheap, but they're a wonderful celebration, especially during the seasons. And we have them up, and I'm doing the kind of.
And this is new for this season, right, Gwendolyn?
Yes, it's very
new for this season.
I'll be doing it. From now on in limited batches. So right now I have three main batches up, and then I will progress on to new ones. And if people request old ones, we may revive them, but limited batches, because it's very labor intensive. keeps your hands going though. You know, my mother, she used to crochet to keep her hands going because she
yes.
was getting bursitis in her hands. And,
yeah.
I've worked for 30 years with my hands at the bench, and they need to be used to keep them in shape. So this is very intensive to doing that, because what you're using, I'm using my hands to make these and roll them. And it takes time, but it's a wonderful thing to do because you're focused on putting a good energy into them and hand creating them. They look, you know, they're lovely individual little creations. And
yes,
so that's,
yes, yes,
that's
yes.
That's what we're up to.
You're doing physical therapy, mental therapy, creativity, and then you're sending that stuff out into the world, which is like, it's a trifecta, it's a quadrifecta, whatever that would be. It is a wonderful, 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 expansive thing to do in this world, which has so many things that are not expansive right now. That's great. And I love this new product that you're coming up with. By the way, I just want to say real quickly that obviously you don't do, Thanksgiving stuffing and cranberry sauce as a fragrance, but you use herbs that we do cook with in your fragrances. You do have thyme and rosemary and things are lurking around in your fragrances. Botanicals are lurking everywhere.
At about the 15th of November, I stick the Winter Queen and the Winter King up on for sale for the holiday season. The Winter King, I use essential oils that are very cold and take you outdoors. and into the woods. Uh-huh. The Winter Queen is the standard potpourri type scents with, you know, a warm clove and cassia, a little bit of tangerine. I like tangerine over the orange, the way it comes out in the blend.
Oh, yeah.
And a little black pepper goes into that, too.
I love that. I love the idea of black pepper going into a fragrance, just like the way I love it when people put black pepper in ice cream, vanilla ice cream. To break the molds that we were raised with, the seal test ice cream, frozen dinner, American pie sort of thing of the 1950s, where we didn't experiment with anything. I mean, there were whole sections of the country that had no idea what garlic was. You know, from New Jersey to Nevada, the garlic was unknown in the United States, basically, except in Little Italy's in cities like Chicago and Philadelphia. But for the most part, Ozzie and Harriet never saw a clove of garlic in their lives. So it's wonderful that you mix those. People didn't cook with garlic. It was a hamburger nation, you know, French fries and cheeseburgers and chocolate milkshakes. But I love that you're combining these wonderful ingredients and really expanding people's consciousnesses through your products on daughtersofisis.com. People have got to go there. And what a great thing to get for Christmas, either for yourself or for a friend, an experiential presence like a fragrance from daughtersofisis.com.
Yeah,
I love that.
Really, it's something that you share with everyone in your environment or, you know, alone. But yes, they're fabulous. They're a fabulous Yuletide or Christmas gift or Hanukkah or how many other?
Kwanzaa. All of them. Yeah.
There's about 15 of them that are around the world. And I like to represent as many cultures as possible, but I do have to admit I fall back sort of on my Celtic roots with the scents that I create for Christmas time, Yuletide. My Winter King and my Winter Queen are basically Mensa. They're Celtic blends.
Uh-huh. All righty. Well, I have to extend our show, our invitation to everyone. Our phone number here at the switchboard, and I will be able to get the phone calls to, is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. I am getting private messages all over my Facebook page. It is clogging up. People are sending me messages about dinner invitations. There are actually two people. Oh, this is adorable. There are three people outside my kitchen window down on the sidewalk waving up at me right now. So obviously some locals. Oh, dear, one of them has a gun. Oh, well, what a way to go. I had always wanted to be killed by a Kennedy or die in a fiery Zeppelin crash. Short of that, being shot by an ill-wisher during a broadcast could also be fun. That's what happened to little Ronnie Blakely, whatever her name was, in the movie Nashville. Remember, she was on stage singing, and a sniper killed her. What a way to go. I wouldn't mind being a little more famous. I'm going to try and signal to that person, can you wait? My career's in such a slump right now. If you could just wait 6 months, I think I can get my career up to the point where I would be glad to be killed, because then people will actually care. Because right now, I don't think anyone will care. I am a notorious procrastinator, and I had planned on dying again at the hands of a Kennedy or in a Zeppelin crash when I was in my 20s, so that I would be like James Dean. How exciting. Or die, you know, in my 30s. Although Marilyn was she was already getting a little bit old to be killed, but she still is memorialized. Everyone is so, you know, everyone thinks Marilyn Monroe was 26 when she died. But I would like to have died then. But stupid Sybil Brunson, I procrastinate on everything. And 1 year after another went by, and I had not gotten killed, nor had I taken my own life. And my career was going along beautifully. I kept wanting to get a little bit better. I was very greedy, like the fisherman's wife in that old fairy tale. And I kept wanting more and more and more. And then my career sort of peaked. And I thought, well, no, I can't do that. And then a year later, it was even lower. And I thought, well, I can't die now. And I even hired someone to kill me. And then they procrastinated and put it off for 2 years. And they never gave my deposit back either, which made me furious with them. So now here I am, old, broken down Sybil Brunchen, grilling onions and doing needlepoint and her own laundry. And no one will care if I'm killed at all. He's walked along. Oh, he must be listening. He's listening to the pod. Oh, thank you, darling. I'm waving to him. Thank you for not killing mummy until I'm more famous. Just give me a little while longer. Gwendolyn's working on getting me to be very famous, and then I shall be ready to be killed. And the more violently, the better. Don't shoot me. Bring an axe. I want it to be much more splashy, like Headless Corpse in Topless Bar, like that wonderful headline. All right. Are we getting some phone calls? I'm not so sure. Are we getting any phone calls yet?
Not yet.
Okay, I'm going to do a couple of things. The phone number again is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. You're listening to Come Now, Don't Sulk, a live podcast from the Here Be Monsters Network on Blog Talk Radio. And we're here every Monday night at 8 p.m., and that's standard time, no longer daylight time. We're on standard time, and that's 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific Coast. And by the way, I want to say a special hello to all our listeners worldwide. We have listeners right now, can you imagine, in Australia and New Zealand. We have them in Europe. A special hello to my Aussies, because you're not only on the other side of the earth, which, my goodness, you're in a different hemisphere. Well, you don't even know what the Big Dipper is, do you, darlings? So you have completely different constellations down there. Mummy is going to come and visit you as soon as possible. Tonight we're going to – you can call in and say anything you like, but tonight I'm going to do a couple of domestic goddess things, because people always say, oh, Mummy, can you give us the tip that you gave on this or that? Apropos of laundry, and Gwendolyn, you jump in any time now because I'm just stirring the onions and the garlic and everything. Oh, you know what? I'm going to do that one first. Darlings, apropos of olive oil, I know that people say it doesn't make a difference. It does make a difference. The better the products you use, the better the ingredients you use, the more wonderful and complex and dreamy the taste will be. Could you use canned tomatoes? Yes. But use canned San Marzano tomatoes. Try it and see. You will be amazed. Olive oil. Don't be afraid to spend some extra money on very good olive oil. And if it's bothering you to do that, then do what Mummy does, because Mummy has been broke most of her life. Buy in quantity. Make sure that you buy the big bottles of things. Be sure you buy the 12-pack of toilet paper rolls. Be sure to buy the quantity of things. It seems more expensive in the short run, but it's more economical in the long run. So Mummy goes and she buys the jumbo bottle of the expensive Cola Vita extra, extra virgin cold-pressed olive oil.
And we have
what
a caller. We have
oh,
a
I
caller.
Do. Good. I'll interrupt my advice for a caller. Who's my caller?
Sybil. This is Lee.
Lee, how are you?
Well, I'm perturbed, Sybil.
Okay, well, we'll stop our talk about domestic things, and we'll hear about the perturbed. What is going on?
Well, you mentioned James Dean, and I don't know if you heard the news.
Wait, say that again.
You mentioned James Dean?
James Dean, yes.
Yeah, just now. And
yes.
I don't know if you've heard the news that – a film company is creating a new movie using CGI James Dean.
Yeah, I heard that.
I had heard that, Lee. Oh, dear. Lee, now I just want to, first of all, home audience, Lee Gannon is one of my oldest friends in the world. I have known her since she was a little girl. As a matter of fact, I coached her in an acting project when she was part of a children's theater production, a teens and children's theater program. And she was a genius back then. And then she went on with her life and had a wonderful life, and it still has a wonderful life and a wonderful marriage. And then she decided, and I shan't give away her age, but she decided to become a stand-up comedian, which is it's one of the most difficult things in the world to do. And here she is, over 30, shall we say, pursuing stand-up comedy, and is a runaway success. Just extraordinary. So, apropos of that, Lee, as you get more famous, and you, I hope, will have more success than I did, eventually you will die, which is unfortunate but necessary, and they will CGI you into various nightclubs in probably the latter part of the 21st century. You, in fact, will be part of this as well. Perhaps they'll even join you up with James Dean and Marilyn Monroe. I mean, who knows? It's like I'm stunned that they're doing this stuff. And I don't know how – I guess the families of these celebrities collect royalties of some sort. Right?
Right.
Does James Dean have a nephew or a niece or something? Does he have any relatives?
He's from a small town in Indiana. I'm sure there are still relatives who are reaping the benefits of his fame. But
I have
think
to say
horrifying.
That in, yeah, in the Star Wars movie, whatever that one was that they just did, with Peter Cushing and with Carrie Fisher, the CGI-ing of them coming back was weird. And the only way at this point that I can feel comfortable with it would be if they were CGIing Peter Cushing or Carrie Fisher, like her hologram when she said, "Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope," on the very first movie, where it was like a broadcast thing that was meant to be odd and strange and stylized, and that would be it. If they had just not had her turn around, you know, when someone said, "Your Majesty" or "Your Highness" or whatever, "we've got the such and such for you," and she turned her, and there was Carrie Fisher in the cowl, you know, robe, and then she turned around and it was Carrie Fisher after an extremely scary facelift. You know, it's like, oh my God, oh God, God. Peter Cushing as a villain, as Admiral what's his name or whatever his name was, he looked Arthur. Like he'd had a very scary facelift too. But with him, it was a little less disturbing, although I just wish they had cut to a broadcast screen in the spaceship and he had given the directive to go ahead and destroy the planet. There's got to have been a way to have done it so that the audience didn't look at each other and snicker, because that's what they did. Everybody snickered. Didn't you, Lee, when you saw the Star Wars movie, right, with Carrie Fisher?
I didn't.
Well, it's on TV. So the next time it's on TV, that latest one, whatever it is, turn it on. It's Rogue One. It's actually a movie that I love. The Rogue movie, I think, is the best of the Star Wars movie, except for maybe The Empire Strikes Back. But Rogue has issues and things in it that are heartbreaking and beautiful, but they use Peter Cushing and Carrie Fisher as CGI things. And when they come on, if you saw it in the movie theater, you didn't hear people gasp and say, "Oh my God, that was amazing. Oh my," and people didn't burst into tears. "Oh, that's our Carrie. No, people just sort of turned to each other, strangers, and snickered and pointed. And they snickered under their breath, the way they did with Jar Jar Binks, the worst character of all time in all fiction. So Jar Jar Binks is literally, and I'm sorry to say this, it's as if he took down his pants and took a dump in a tin pan for the audience. Jar Jar Binks is the most excremental piece of rubbish that had George Lucas. I'm shocked. Only a billionaire could get away with such a piece of crap. And I can't believe that Steven Spielberg didn't call his friend up and say, "Good heavens, George, get rid of that Jar Jar Binks hideousness. It devalues the entire franchise." But Lee, please watch Rogue One and do it uninterrupted. It's a beautiful movie. The end of it, I don't want to do a spoiler. The end is shocking. But when they show Carrie Fisher, oh my God, and oh God, no. It's as bad as the colorizing of films. When they colorized Casablanca for that year or two that they were doing that on TCM, it was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
colorizing.
That was shocking. That was shocking.
First of all, you don't colorize a damn I Love Lucy episode. Ladies, do you agree? Lee, do you agree on that?
I do.
Colorizing I Love Lucy. It's black and white. That's the way it goes. Get used to it. You know what? Let's colorize Matthew Brady's photographs of Gettysburg, the battlefields with the dead bodies. Let's colorize everything. It's like a bunch of bull crap. So I'm with you, Lee.
People have actually done that. People have colorized Matthew Brady's. Yeah. He was a fabulous photographer.
They think it makes it more relevant or something. Lee, is that the only thing that's bugging you, or is there something else you'd like to say? Because you're one of the smartest, most savvy gals I know. There's got to be a list of 10. I can't believe that James Dean's the one that you picked first. Now, what else is bugging you tonight?
Okay, the other thing that's bothering me is the sweeping generalization of our generation with OK Boomer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with you on that. I think that the sooner that we put on Madame Defarge outfits and pick up our pitchforks and our sickles and scythes and light torches and simply take to the streets and solve that problem right there. There is no solution to it other than violence. I'm sorry. I'm with you on that. I'm so sick of the generalization. I'm just whatever. I try not to generalize about this new the millennial generation and whatever the generation that's after them, the Z generation or whatever. So I resent when they generalize about other generations, like the boomer thing completely. It's whatever. Can I ask you something, though, Lee? Do you find that because this is apropos of what you just said, do you find that when you're doing your nightclub acts, do you find a mix of generations in your audiences? Do you find young people and older people and contemporaries? Do you find everything?
I do. And I'm always surprised that very young people think I'm funny. I had a young man who's like, he was a teenager. He was like 19. And he came up to me and he said, "You're old as F," which is true. But he said, "But you're funny." And I thought that was the best compliment I ever got, because I am old as F.
Wait a minute.
I mean, I was smoking joints and I found Toady Fields funny as hell. I was ramming and jamming in those days, but if Toady Fields was on an afternoon show or something, I'd sit down and watch because it made me laugh like hell.
Oh yeah. And Selma Diamond, there were comedians back then, Shelley Berman, all of those comedians back in the 50s and 60s were brilliant. And I think it's so interesting. Turner Classic Movies flubs on a few things, but they don't flub on the silent film things. People have this notion that silent films are completely hackneyed and have nothing to say or have no connection to us. You know, you watch some silent films, and I defy you to not laugh out loud at different things in silent films that are just genius with no dialogue, simply with mime, with action and reaction, and watching those actors create hysterical comedy simply with movement and nothing else. That comedy can appeal to all generations if it's good enough. And I was very lucky years ago. I'm just going to tell a very short story. I was hosting evenings Saturday nights at the Roxy, and I was I did nightclubs. I did all the big clubs before they vanished in the AIDS catastrophe. And I was at every major club, Studio 54, the Palladium, Limelight, everything. And I was at the Roxy every Saturday night. And I had a producer named Lee, who I won't give away his name because I don't want to have him embarrassed by the punchline of the story. And he was the booker for the entire night at the Roxy. And there was a DJ there, and his name Well, I won't give his name away because his first name was so distinctive that people say, oh, I know who that is. So I was upstairs in what I called the Mondo Blondo Lounge, which was a separate part of the Roxy complex. And this DJ said to Lee, why are you hiring Sybil Brunson? She's so over the hill and so passe, no one's going to go upstairs during the Saturday night and see her shows. They'll stay down on the main dance floor where I am, but they're not going to go upstairs. And Lee said, oh, I think you're going to be very surprised. And I was horrified because I actually had heard that this DJ said that. The first Saturday I was there, we had only a little bit of lead time. We only had a week's worth of PR. And this is before computers. This is back 25 years ago. And so I went upstairs and I got ready and I was going to do a evening of trivia and a competition with audience members. So I was going to bring people up on the stage and interview them and talk to them and have them do answer questions like a game show. And the name of the room was I called it the Mondo Blondo Lounge. And to make a long story short, it was packed to the point where they were out the door and then down the staircase onto the dance floor and could not get in. And people were trying to actually get into the Mondo Blondo Lounge with the staircase. The glass windows there were overlooking the dance floor, and people were trying to come up into this huge separate lounge area to be there for the show. And my audience, Lee, apropos of you, was safety pin in noses, punkers, goth kids, East Village, unwashed, weird kids. And they were, yes, I had contemporaries there. Yes, I had some older Park Avenue types there, like my new, you know, my wealthy Fifth Avenue crowd, butted up against people in full leather with safety pins and pierced eyebrows. This is 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And the DJ, Lee, went to the DJ and said, look at Sybil's demographic. You're going to S-H-I-T. And the DJ was mortified. And that's how it was every week. Sold out, packed in, and kids everywhere. And the kids used to come up to me, and I'm sorry for you, Lee, that they would say something like you're old as F. They never said that to me. They were always incredibly respectful and so solicitous, although they did point at me as if I was a dinosaur display at the Museum of Natural History. I kind of felt like a talking brontosaurus. So it was, but I'm so, and you know something, Lee, you're funny and lovely, and I can imagine that kids would get a big kick out of you because you're classy, and you also are timeless. The stuff you're talking about in your comedy is timeless. That's what comedy is. It's the ability to appeal to all races, all religions, everything. Yes, there's a certain amount of stuff that's topical, but then there's also the stuff that appeals to everybody. And I can imagine you have a big crowd of kids. That's what's going to keep you going, Lee. And they're going to keep you young. You already look like $1 million, but my God, making people laugh is the most wholesome, sacred thing you can do. It cures
cancer.
You are an antioxidant. When you go to the mirror tonight and wash off your makeup, I want you to look in the mirror, Lee, and say, I am a giant antioxidant. I am radium, but without those nasty burns afterwards. I cure cancer, and I do it without having people's hair fall out. I am special.
We have another
Lee,
caller.
Oh, well, I want to just let's hold the caller for 1 second. Lee, where's your next performance?
I don't have anything. I'm taking a break. Probably we'll get back to stand-up in January.
Okay.
I'm rewriting
Will you keep
material.
Me posted?
I am, but I'm still doing improv a couple times a month.
Well, okay, so where do you do that? Can people come see that?
Yes, it's at Catch Theater in Charlotte.
Charlotte, North Carolina, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. So, folks, please watch for that and go see Lee Gannon because she is lovely. Lee, break a leg.
Thank you. Love you, Sybil.
And I love you, too. And happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
You, too.
Good night.
Good night.
Hello, other caller.
Is it me? Hello.
I'm not sure. Who is it?
It's Jan in California. I'm
Jan,
so sorry.
Jan, how are you?
I thought Lee was awesome, and I didn't know they would interrupt your call. First.
No. We had a wonderful talk, and we talked about the CGI thing is so annoying. But, you know, this is what people are gilding lilies now.
It's the world we live in.
It's the world we live in.
How about the world we used to live in?
Yeah.
When you mention silent films, I have to go to my all-time favorite. I hope it's yours, too, or one of them, Wings. The first Best Picture and the most beautiful cast ever in a film, I really believe.
Oh, beautiful.
Think
a beautiful movie. Yeah.
Clara
Bow. It's a beautiful movie. Yeah.
Richard Arlen, Gary Cooper, Buddy Rogers, they were gorgeous. And, you know, people went to the movies to, you know, there was excitement. There were dogfights with planes. It was World War One. It was just, like, fabulous. And then you had these beautiful, sensitive performances by people who didn't speak but conveyed all of that with facial expressions, with, you know, with their body movements. It's like an amazing thing. And
well, you're talking about people who had to listen with their eyes because it's, you know, acting, you know, great acting teachers always say acting is not speaking. Acting is listening. You listen to the other person, and that's the strange thing. The audience doesn't know why a performance is brilliant. They don't necessarily know why a performance is brilliant. But if you watch people like Meryl Streep, Betty Davis, if you watch these people listen, they're listening. So when it's not, it's my turn, it's your turn as
an
actor
not what you,
speaking.
It's not what you say, it's how you react to what's said, how you convey the emotion that maybe everyone in the audience is experiencing.
Yeah.
And here you are in some kind of special connection with people on the screen, and they're big and they're fabulous, and I don't know.
Well, Betty Davis was someone who was able to, and she did this over and over again in so many movies. You know, I think the only movie she didn't do it in was, you know, Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth. She would smoke a cigarette.
No smoking in Elizabeth.
with no dialogue. So she would she would light a cigarette, and she would think, and she would be thinking. And you could watch Betty Davis with a cigarette and dead silence forever, because what she was conveying through her eyes and through her inner life. It's funny, Betty Davis never did a silent movie. Joan Crawford did silent movies. Mary Astor and Norma Shearer did silent movies.
But,
and they had to learn how to act without speaking.
Right.
And then they were lucky enough to make the transition into the talkies. Davis was only an actress in the talkies, but she studied what it was to have her face, her hands, her body language convey a world of emotions.
Tell
without
the whole
having
story.
To speak. Yes.
Tell the
whole
story.
Stories.
Yep. Yep. She was great.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. But as you said, this is the world we live in now with, you know, CGI and colorizing and people tweaking and fixing stuff. Again, I think that, you know, Carrie Fisher and Peter Cushing, who both of whom I love as actors, I think that if they had used it more cleverly, it wouldn't have been so jarring to see that in the Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway.
Well, I was watching commercials just for the heck of it. And you know that there's like only 2 seconds of any one image in most commercials. Because that's the credit they give us, that we have to be excited or stirred or whatever in 2 seconds. Or we'll just leave the audience.
Well,
to get these things, it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm watching, because I am broadcasting from home, I'm watching an Allstate commercial while I stir the onions and mushrooms. And it's interesting, Tina Fey was on with an Allstate commercial where they have that wonderful actor, and I know his name as well as my own, but I can't think of it right now. He's the one who keeps playing Mayhem. And they have that wonderful actor who was on, you know, Oz and was on Law and Order, and they have him stitched up and everything.
Oh.
And he's wearing a jacket and tie, and he plays okay. Mayhem. So each commercial, it's him causing problems.
Uh-huh.
Or right now he's doing Bernard. And
okay.
then another commercial, he was the cat who's turned on the sink. Anyway, Tina Fey is driving a car, and he's portraying her St. Bernard and the fact that he's dumped her purse and could be causing a car accident, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
He's a genius. The whole program, the whole thing is a genius thing. While I was watching it, Jan, while you said that,
mm-hmm.
apropos of your two-second count, I
uh-huh.
literally, the commercial came on as you said that, and I watched
yep.
the commercial,
yep.
and each cut, each edit, was
mm-hmm.
2 seconds.
2 seconds.
The longest one.
That's the credit they give to us, that we can't
right.
sustain interest for more than 2 seconds. And you've got
right.
to change it fast, 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 or you'll lose them. I'm sure that's
right.
what
the
they
longest
think.
The longest edit in it
mm-hmm.
was
mm-hmm.
each thing was 2 seconds. So it was a 2 second mm-hmm. close-up of Tina Fey saying something, and then it was
yep.
a 2 second of the actor playing. The longest one was 3, maybe 4 seconds, and
uh-huh.
it was a close-up on the app, on the Allstate app, on the phone.
Absolutely.
So the
exactly.
product warranted
mm-hmm.
4 seconds, but
mm-hmm.
the actors and the storyline of the commercial, he hangs
yeah.
out of the window and barks at a car that pulls up, and there's a real dog in that car, and he's barking
uh-huh.
at that dog, and that dog barks at him. That was a 2 second cut.
Two-second
Everything
thing.
Is 2 seconds. It's
yep.
fascinating.
Yep.
And that's why no one reads Mummy's stories anymore and doesn't even listen to her
Tourette's
anymore, because
yeah.
my Tourette's are too long.
Well,
it's
I don't
like,
agree
no.
with that, but I know what you're saying. Yes.
Well,
there
you're one of eight. You're one of eight tourists. You're my Tourette's. You are one of eight viewers of my Tourette. I have eight viewers and you're one of them.
No. You know, I think people, again, they're just, you know, they read, but. Well, I don't know how much they read, but they just don't take that extra step to tell you.
No,
that
they want
to
everything
story.
To be done for them. There is
yeah.
no inner imagination anymore. When you read,
no.
what is magical about reading is that
mm-hmm.
someone is telling you a story, but
mm-hmm.
you are actually living the story inside your head as
oh,
you
yeah.
read it.
So yeah.
you have adjusted the story in the ways that are special to you as it
yes.
unfolds. When you
yes.
watch... And I include even movies, sadly. When
mm-hmm.
you watch movies or television or whatever, it
mm-hmm.
is being done for you. For
yeah.
A lot of it is being done for you. And
mm-hmm.
the 20th century has been about, you know, entertainment taking over the responsibility of the audience. Prior to that,
oh,
it
yeah.
was theater, if you were lucky enough to live near a theater, and then
mm-hmm.
for the rest of the, for 90% of the population of Europe and America, it was about reading a book that you were lucky
yeah.
enough to be able to get or buy or inherit.
Oh,
no wonder
yeah.
people read The Tale of Two Cities 25,
yes.
30 times in
yes.
their lifetime, because there was, because you
Moby
were lucky
Dick.
If you had a book.
Moby Dick,
yeah.
for crying out
Moby
loud.
Dick.
Who would
yeah.
do that today? Who would read that today?
Or War and
it's
Peace.
Like one of the greatest.
God. There's a movie. There's a book that's 8,000 pages.
Yeah. Oh,
hey Jan,
my.
I have a question
yes.
for you.
Yeah.
A quick question, because we're going to run out of time.
Oh no.
Quick question.
Uh-huh.
I was talking about chores I like doing: washing my own dishes, doing my own laundry, gardening, and I love cooking. Name
yes.
one chore that you really love doing, that you get captivated doing. Is there a chore? If you were
oh, yes.
a billionaire or won the Mega
oh, yes.
Millions, what
would
chore would you still want to do yourself?
I would still do it no matter what, and that's feeding my pets. Feeding my cats who live outside and my little
yeah.
dog who lives inside. I would do
yeah.
that if I were the richest person in the whole world.
Yeah, I would too.
And I'm a little
I don't
emotional
have any pets
about that, them. But...
Yeah,
you know,
I get. I love.
I have seven
I love
cats
that.
Outside.
That's why I go to the park and feed the birds. People always
exactly.
say, "Oh my God, Mommy, you're
going."
I love going, and I love going there and feeding the birds,
well,
and I love the sparrows running up to me when
oh,
I get near the park. If I'm a block away from the park, the
yeah.
sparrows will
yeah.
will dive bomb me. They'll actually fly at me and want me to notice that they're
yes.
they're waving. They're waving their wings at me, fluttering.
Yes.
It's literally
over
out of a
here,
Disney movie.
Over
so
here,
funny.
A little bit
yes,
over here.
Yes, over here, over here.
Oh.
The seagulls do the same thing to me out on Fire
oh,
Island.
Yeah.
But, of course,
they
treat
too.
Me like Pippi Hedren. Yeah, they dive bomb and actually will strike you. So if you don't have bacon
no.
on you, they'll poke out your eyes. It's bad.
No.
Don't Is there another chore you like doing at home?
Oh.
Other than feeding your animals?
Well, that's number one. Let me think.
But I mean, do you like doing your laundry?
Right. Nah, I do it because I have to. But I love moving objects d'art. Pardon my French, which is horrible. I love repositioning things. I'm always got an eye. I've got an eye, and it's like, oh, you know, that's not quite right. Or I'll get something new, which throws off the whole thing.
Oh,
I got to start over and
replace things. Do you dust while you move things around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So your apartment, your house is
very clean. And I like cooking. You know, I like cooking. You know,
yeah.
I don't do like you do, but I do enjoy it because Richard is appreciative. And anyway,
nice to cook for someone. It's nice to cook for someone who appreciates it because if you're cooking for someone who's perpetually on a diet,
and I do it strictly on his the things he likes to eat.
Yeah.
We don't eat beef. We don't eat pork. Chicken and turkey, we don't feel too badly about them. And he won't eat fish, so there's a lot of poultry over here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes
and
sense.
veggies, you know, and such. So,
okay.
Anyway.
Well, thank you for calling in tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. I love you. I'm just, you know, always happy to be a little tiny part of your show. And
oh, well, thank you. Give my love to Richard. I can hear him in the background.
I will.
And are you cooking Thanksgiving this year?
Oh, I haven't decided yet. We haven't made that choice yet. There's a place where we could get, but it's not the same. But I'm happy with a special chicken dish I make that has, what's that anise flavored thing that looks like a bulb, but it's a vegetable.
Oh.
If you cut it, you would think, is it arrowroot? No.
Gwendolyn.
I know. I can see it.
It's licorice flavored.
Like celery.
Yeah.
It looks like celery if you cut those pieces
off.
Trying
to blank. Oh, my
okay,
God.
People at home. People
call in, please. I'll go to the store and I'll get it. And I'll think, oh,
fennel.
Well, there you go.
It's fennel.
That's it. Thank you. Fennel. That's it. Fennel. It's carrots and fennel and onions and chicken, and it's sensational. It just comes
I
out like
that.
A dream.
I love that.
Oh,
the one
so
thing
delicious.
I worry about with fennel is that people overdo it. If they've never used it before,
you got to be careful.
They put an entire bulb of fennel into, like, you know, a Cornish hen, and then it's like, oh my goodness, why didn't you just paint the Cornish hen black and turn it into a licorice sparrow. It's like, oh, for heaven's
sake. Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, you got to be careful with your fennel. But just, you know, like little chunks, and then you've got your onions and your carrots, and anybody who doesn't want the fennel doesn't have to eat it. Just makes a nice, yummy
It's lovely.
Taste. So, anyway.
Great.
Okay,
well, I did chicken one Thanksgiving many years ago, and people sounded, I told them ahead of time I was doing these incredible roast chickens and everything, and they were so disappointed. So I'd already bought the stuff and started the dinner, so I just ended up dressing as a pilgrim, and that sort of settled them down at the Thanksgiving table. And I told them, you know, I told them Mayflower jokes, and it was still a success. Anyway, I love you, Jan. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
All right, you too, honey. Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
I want to remind everybody that we are here every Monday night. This is you're listening to our wonderful Come Now, Don't Sulk, which is part of Blog Talk Radio's. It's actually part of the Here Be Monsters Network, which has other fine programming on it. And you can check those out when you go to their link on the Blog Talk Radio site on your internet. We are sponsored, of course, by daughtersofisis.com. I'm still getting tons of messages here. I'm sorry. I'm being bombarded by messages. And two more people came and waved up at my window tonight. It's so funny. They're not calling in, but they're waving from below. we are produced by the daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And Gwendolyn is my producer and muse, and, of course, the head chemist and magic maker at daughtersofisis.com. I was going to get to some domestic goddess things, but we don't have time. A couple of things I want you to know, though, about my cooking tonight. If you watch the cooking shows, which I do all the time, I love watching all of them. Maybe I don't watch Guy Fieri, but I do watch a lot of them. And it is funny to see people like Lydia throw garlic, diced garlic, into a hot pan. And she's a brilliant chef, okay, and a brilliant cook and a brilliant restaurateur and a brilliant businesswoman. But one thing these people forget is that they need to explain what they're doing a little bit more clearly so that the home cook doesn't screw up. There is nothing worse than burning garlic. It just, once it's gone, it's gone. There's no fixing it. There's no spoonful of sugar. There's no salt or pepper or herbs. There's nothing. Burned garlic is burned. It doesn't have to be black either. It's that special moment, like with nuts, when you're roasting nuts in a pan before you put something else in with them. There's this moment that they hover between brilliance and catastrophe. And that's how it is with garlic cloves, whether you've chopped them or they're whole or whatever. So the most wonderful thing I ever learned as a young kid about garlic, as a young girl from my grandmother, who was a brilliant chef, although she had a full staff of cooks, but she knew how to cook, was cushion your garlic. Always put other vegetables into the pan and the heat and the olive oil before you put the garlic in. Make sure there's lots of other things in there, even if it's only onions. Make sure that they're sweating and that they're sautéing and everything, and then you add the garlic. Do not do it the other way around. Garlic cooks instantly. The other things, a mirepoix, like celery, carrots, onions, anything else that you put in there takes longer to cook and makes a perfect safety cushion for the garlic that you add. So remember that. Another thing, garlic salt. I do not ever use powdered garlic. I don't use powdered garlic. I have never tasted anything or had a cook who was brilliant who said, oh yeah, powdered garlic is a wonderful thing. It makes this recipe. Don't use a real garlic, use powdered garlic. No chef I have ever respected has ever said such a thing. I'm eager to learn differently, but I have never seen anyone use powdered garlic when real garlic was possible. It's just, I don't get it. Tomatoes. Oh, this is so important. First of all, back to San Marzano tomatoes. San Marzanos are much more complex than just regular tomatoes. But whatever you do, never, ever refrigerate a tomato. You go to grocery stores on Fire Island in Cherry Grove. There's a lovely grocery store there. He refrigerates the tomatoes. In the fresh produce section, he puts the tomatoes in a chilling place, along with all the other vegetables that are being refrigerated. The flavonoids in tomatoes are very fragile. They begin to be wiped out at about 50 degrees. If you refrigerate a tomato, you wipe out those, and even cooking, the caramelizing does not bring them back. Do not ever refrigerate a tomato. Buy a tomato and use it. And if you don't use it, put it on top of your refrigerator or, in a bowl on the counter and get busy. Use it because it won't last, but do never, never, never refrigerate a tomato. And that's why in the fall when people have grown tomatoes in Cherry Grove, they always, at the end, those last wonderful tomatoes that are on the vines, they make a point of picking them and getting them even greenish. They get them into someone's home to be used in a salad or to be cooked with or whatever before the temperature drops. And you have that, not a freeze, just a little bit of a cold snap ruins them. They just become wet styrofoam. A tomato that's been refrigerated, you cut it open, there's no smell, it just becomes wet styrofoam. There is nothing more magical than a tomato right off the vine. If you've never tried it, try it. Gwendolyn, do you have a quick home cue and idea about cooking and food that you love to pass on to people?
Well, you know, I make different types of honey. I get local harvested honey, and I use essential oils to put into the honey. And I make lavender honey, Bulgarian lavender honey. Rose honey, orange honey, a real
So in other words, if
honey.
They weren't made by the bees from certain flowers, you can fix it so that they do feel like a lavender honey or a rose honey. It's wonderful. That's a wonderful thing. And
yeah,
by the way, I just want to mention to people, Gwendolyn, you're using specific edible essential oils. People have to remember that there are certain essential oils that are not edible. They may smell fabulous, and you may be tempted to put them in a cookie or a honey, but you can't do that. You have to use the right ones. Isn't that correct?
That's absolutely correct, yes. And you can put like 2 drops of Bulgarian lavender essential oil into those little jelly jars you get for packing. I don't know if they're not a quart, half quart or whatever, but you fill one of those with honey and you put 2 drops of that lavender and mix it up. And
now, does it have to be food grade? But it has to be food grade lavender oil, doesn't it? Isn't there a difference between just general oil or?
No, if you're buying good essential oils, their food grade is basically a well-distilled, a distilled plant that hasn't been put through any chemical, and no good essential oil should be distilled with chemicals. So,
I was told once that you had to be very cautious about just plopping anything in. And that you had to really be sure that the essential oil store or wherever you were buying it said, no, this is edible. This is a food grade edible.
Yeah. If it's labeled as food grade, then it's made for commercial sale or retail sale that way. Yes.
I love that you mentioned
that.
Before I got to know Gwendolyn, I have a Facebook friend who's still a Facebook friend of mine, and Catherine, and she loves to experiment with oils and with she also is making a whole line of makeup and moisturizer products and everything, and she gave me lavender vodka, she gave me lavender sugar, and she gave me lavender honey, and I used the lavender sugar in my Arkansas black applesauce that I made 2 falls ago, not last fall, but the fall before. And it was a very complex recipe. I was just experimenting and I used Arkansas black apples, which are not, they're not edible as raw apples. They're very woody. They're very fibrous. They're just not interesting at all. They're beautiful. They're like little perfect red delicious apples, except that they're nearly black. And I mean, they look beautiful, but they're fit only to cook or bake with. Well, I made applesauce, and I've got to say something. Applesauce, how complex can it be? I made applesauce. It's probably one of the most beautiful things I've ever made in my life. And I used all sorts of ingredients, cinnamon, of course, and nutmeg and everything. But it was the lavender that I decided to improvise with that people went nuts for. And they couldn't quite figure out what was going on. It was beyond delicious. I froze some and put it in the back of my freezer, right? And I forgot it was there. A week ago, 2 years later, I saw this container. I thought, what is that? I pulled it out of the back of my freezer with all the other frozen things that I've got in there, elaborate bolognese sauces and everything. And I took it out and I thawed it, and it was the applesauce, which was even more magical than it was 2 years ago. It was literally witchcraft. You would be so proud of me, Gwendolyn, to know that I, too, am a sorceress.
I don't doubt it for a moment, Mommy. I don't doubt it for a moment. The wonderful thing about using an essential oil, of course, is knowing how much to use. Like I said, 2 drops into a quart will really do it. Making the sugars and things like, that's elaborate. You really have to basically turn with those. But I would have loved to have had some of that lavender sugar for tea. I really would.
Well, I asked her when she handed it to me at the restaurant we were having lunch at that day, and she handed me a container, and it was a bunch of sugar. It was raw sugar. It wasn't white and bleached, but it had lavender buds all mixed in it. I said, how did you do this? She said, I just took a handful of lavender, threw it in there, and have been tumbling it, and now it's yours. And I'm telling you, I would run into a fire to save that sugar. And the vodka too.
Quite a bit of time to get it done too.
Yeah, I'm looking at the time. I just realized we're out of time tonight. Listen, everybody, it's been lovely tonight. Thank you, Lee and Jan, for calling in. This is Come Now, Don't Sulk, part of the fabulous Caribbean Monsters Network. We were produced by DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Gwendolyn, thank you so much. I will see you next Monday night right here, and I'll see you all on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Gwendolyn, you want to take us out with our theme?
I will. Thank you, Don.
Love you so much.